Welcome to the Shortwave Report for February 17, 2012. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. The Shortwave Report is a 30-minute review of news and opinion heard on the shortwave radio and the internet in Northern California. Listening to international broadcast at home is quite easy. You just need a shortwave radio with a schedule of English language broadcast or a computer with an internet connection. To help you with this, I'll announce times, frequencies, and website addresses at the conclusion of each series of stories. At the website for this show, that's www.outfarpress.com, you can find a schedule for dozens of international broadcasters in English. There you can also listen to the past 5 shortwave reports, find advice for listening to shortwave at home, and find internet links for global news sources. Please check it out and tell a friend. In today's edition, you'll hear reports from China Radio International, NHK World Radio Japan, Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, Radio Havana Cuba, and Spanish National Radio. We'll begin with China Radio International. Chinese Premier Wen Jiabao told European Union leaders that China is ready for a bigger role in resolving the Eurozone debt crisis. China is complaining about the growing U.S. trade protectionism, specifically the 100% tariff on Chinese-made solar panels and the outright banning of some solar products. China Radio International.
Premier Wen Jiabao has told EU leaders that China is ready for a bigger part in the resolution of the Eurozone debt crisis.
China's desire to support the EU's dealing with the European debt crisis is sincere and determined, and China remains confident in the euro and Europe's economy. China supports the EU's strengthening financial discipline and hopes Europe continues to send clear, beneficial and positive news.
Wen Jiabao has made the comments following his meetings with European Council President Herman Van Rompuy and European Commission President José Manuel Barroso at the 14th leaders' meeting between China and the European Union in Beijing. Wen Jiabao says China is considering increasing its participation in the rescue funds aimed at resolving the debt crisis. He made the same promise during a meeting with German Chancellor Angela Merkel in Beijing earlier this month. Van Rompuy says he welcomes China's engagement towards the Eurozone stability.
We welcome the positive attitude and engagement China and Premier Wen himself have taken publicly towards the stability of the Eurozone and the European Union. And we also welcome China's readiness to enhance consultation and cooperation on the stability of the Eurozone.
EU leaders have been seeking investment from the Chinese side to help bolster a planned bailout fund worth up some 500 billion euros. The crisis in Eurozone has intensified in recent days, with credit rating agency Moody's downgrading Spain, Italy and Portugal, and the credit outlook for France, the UK and Austria. Regarding the Syrian issue, Wen Jiabao says it is an urgent task to prevent war and chaos in that country. Wen says China will not render protection to any party, including the Syrian government. At the same time, the Chinese premier has touched on the recent conflicts in the Tibetan region, saying any attempt to undermine the stability there has no popular support. The latest actions adopted by the United States show that Chinese enterprises are facing growing U.S. trade protectionism. The U.S. has launched anti-dumping investigations against Chinese solar panel manufacturers after 7 U.S. solar energy companies asked the U.S. Commerce Department to impose duties of more than 100% on their Chinese competitors. And more recently, Chinese solar panel manufacturer Canadian Solar received a letter from the United States International Trade Commission saying Westinghouse Solar, a U.S. solar equipment maker, had complained to ITC that Canadian Solar had infringed on its patents and demanded a permanent order barring some of their products from entering the U.S. market. A spokeswoman, Xin Tianying from Canadian Solar, referred to Westinghouse Solar's patent infringement accusations as groundless.
The patent that Westinghouse Solar has is the locking mechanism between solar panels, and what we are producing is one of the panels. It's like they have a patent for a button, and they are accusing us of infringement for producing the fabric with a buttonhole in it.
Besides the dispute between solar companies, the U.S. continues to investigate wind tower imports from China and pressuring the Chinese yuan to appreciate. U.S. President Barack Obama took the quickly escalating trade disputes to a different level. During his State of the Union address, he launched a trade enforcement unit targeting China.
And I will not stand by when our competitors don't play by the rules. We've brought trade cases against China at nearly twice the rate as the last administration, but we need to do more. Tonight, I'm announcing the creation of a trade enforcement unit that will be charged with investigating unfair trading practices in countries like China.
On the other hand, China also complains about restrictions on U.S. exports of high-tech products to China and hurdles to Chinese investment in the United States. According to Tao Wenzhao, senior research fellow at the Institute of American Studies of the Chinese Academy of Social Sciences, U.S. exports of high-tech products to China have actually decreased in proportion over the years.
At the beginning of this century, the high-tech imports from the United States accounted for more than 16% of China's import of high-tech. But last year, the high-tech imports from the United States accounted only for 6%.
Foreign Ministry spokesman Liu Weiming urges both countries to put effort into increasing China-U.S. economic and trade cooperation.
China-U.S. economic and trade cooperation are mutually beneficial. Both parties should try to resolve relevant problems through dialogue and consultation. We don't wish to politicize trade issues.
A Morgan Stanley report shows that 4 to 8 million jobs in the United States are closely tied to Sino-U.S. trade. At the same time, the U.S. is the biggest source of China's foreign investment. Although trade tensions between China and the United States may be exacerbated by the global financial outlook and U.S. election politics, Professor Tao Wenzhao hopes that a visit by Chinese Vice President Xi Jinping can remove some obstacles.
Trade imbalance between China and the United States has been there for quite some time, and we hope this visit will urge the United States to take some concrete measures to balance the bilateral trade.
For CRI, this is Ding Lulu.
Those reports were from China Radio International, heard from 4 to 5 p.m. at 11970 and from 6 p.m. to 11 at either 9790, 6020 or 6190 or on the web at english.cri.cn. All the times I'm announcing are for Pacific Standard Time, so adjust them to your time zone. On to NHK World Radio Japan. A recent NHK poll shows that only 20% of those surveyed support the restarting of the dozens of idle nuclear power plants in Japan. The high reading in one of the damaged Fukushima reactors has continued to rise despite further efforts to cool it down. TEPCO, the company that owns the Fukushima nuclear reactors, wants the Japanese government to increase public funds to pay out claims and support the company. The government insists on having a say in how the company is run. NHK Japan.
An NHK poll shows that just over 20% of people surveyed support restarting the dozens of idle nuclear reactors in Japan. NHK carried out the telephone survey over the weekend. About 1,000 people responded. 22% said they support restarting the reactors. 36% were opposed. Another 36% were undecided. All but three of Japan's 54 reactors have been idle since the March 11th disaster. Most went offline for regular inspections. The idle reactors are required to pass government stress tests to judge their safety levels before they can be restarted. But securing local approval to operate remains the biggest obstacle for the reactors to go back into service.
Tokyo Electric Power Company says the reading of one of the thermometers in a number 2 reactor at its Fukushima Daiichi nuclear plant surpassed 80 degrees Celsius shortly after 2 p.m. on Sunday. TEPCO plans to further investigate the cause, as the thermometer may be malfunctioning. The reading of one of the thermometers at the bottom of the reactor began rising in late January. It fell temporarily after more water was injected into the reactor, but started to rise again on Saturday. The utility increased the amount of cooling water by 1 ton per hour to 14.6 tons, but the reading continued to rise and reached 82 degrees around 2:20 p.m. The government and TEPCO declared in December that all the reactors were in a state of cold shutdown, with temperatures below 100 degrees. They set new guidelines to keep reactor temperatures at the maximum of 80 degrees, given the thermometer's margin of error of up to 20 degrees. This is the first time the temperature reading has exceeded 80 degrees Celsius since the declaration was made. TEPCO reported the situation to the Nuclear and Industrial Safety Agency and plans to increase the volume of cooling water by 3 tons per hour to 18 tons. Japan's industry minister has warned Tokyo Electric Power Company, operator of the troubled Fukushima Daiichi nuclear power plant, that it must accept state control in order to get a capital injection. Yukio Edano told TEPCO President Toshio Nishizawa on Monday that the company will not receive public money unless the government gets adequate voting rights in return. He said the government will not otherwise accept the business revival plan the utility is to submit by the end of March. TEPCO needs a large amount of financial aid to cover compensation payments to victims of the nuclear disaster at the plant and for alternative thermal power generation in place of nuclear energy. Nishizawa said TEPCO will bear the government's requirement in mind in working out its revival plan. The president told reporters after the meeting that his company will discuss details of a capital injection request with a government-backed organization for the victims. Providing that it acquires the voting rights, the government has decided to give the utility nearly $9 billion in additional financial aid to be used for compensation payments. The money is separate from the proposed capital injection fund for TEPCO.
Those reports were from NHK World Radio Japan, heard from 9 to 9:30 p.m. at 6110 or on the web at www.nhk.or.jp. Next, Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle. Moody's has lowered the ratings on most all of the countries in the Eurozone. The German foreign minister is on an 8-day tour of Latin America to promote a free trade agreement between Europe and Mercosur. On Monday, Germans paid homage to the victims of the massive Allied bombing of Dresden. In Italy, prosecutors have demanded a 5-year prison sentence for former President Silvio Berlusconi. Radio Deutsche Welle.
Rating agency Moody's Investor Service has downgraded its credit ratings on Italy, Portugal, and Spain, and placed negative outlooks on France, Britain, and Austria, blaming the ongoing fallout from the Eurozone crisis. Moody's also cut its ratings on the smaller nations of Slovakia, Slovenia, and Malta. It says it took the actions due to the uncertainty over European Union financial reforms, the region's weak economic outlook, and the resulting pressure on fragile markets. German Foreign Minister Guido Westerwelle launched his 8-day Latin American tour on Monday in Brazil, where he met with his Brazilian counterpart Antonio Patriotto. Both foreign ministers called for the signing of a free trade agreement between the European Union and the South American trade bloc Mercosur, which groups Argentina, Brazil, Paraguay, and Uruguay. Negotiations over a free trade agreement have so far stumbled over differences on agriculture. They also discussed Brazilian President Dilma Rousseff's visit to Germany in March, where she is slated to open the Hanover Technology Fair. Westerwelle will travel to Brazil's economic capital, Sao Paulo, on Tuesday and to Rio de Janeiro on Wednesday before moving on to Peru, Panama, and Mexico. Several thousand Germans formed a human chain in central Dresden on Monday to pay homage to the victims of the massive Allied bombing in February 1945. Participants formed the chain in the city, where up to 25,000 people died in 3 days of Allied bombing at the tail end of World War II. Earlier, some 2,500 people had taken part in a march against Nazism in the city, where for the past several years the bombing anniversary has seen clashes between neo-Nazis and extreme leftists. Some 4,500 police were on hand ahead of the demonstration, and no major incident had been reported.
In Italy, prosecutors have demanded a 5-year prison sentence for former Premier Silvio Berlusconi in his trial on corruption charges. Berlusconi is on trial for having paid a British lawyer around €450,000 to lie in other trials, including tax dodging and false accounting of his business dealings. Prosecutors want a quick verdict as, due to the statute of limitations, the charges expire in mid-July. Berlusconi stepped down in November after failing to persuade investors he could revive Italy's ailing economy.
Those reports were from Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, which may be heard at a combined audio-video website, mediacenter.dw-world.de. Next, Radio Havana, Cuba. A viewpoint on the long-running U.S. practice of saturating Cuba with anti-Castro radio and TV signals, including calls for terrorist actions and illegal immigration. Radio Havana, Cuba.
A constant of U.S. aggressive policy against Cuba have been radio and television broadcasts to the island, despite the condemnation of world forums of this unfair practice in violation of international conventions. In Geneva, the World Radio Communications Conference recently confirmed that Washington violates the rules by invading Cuba with radio frequencies sent from an aircraft. Today, over 2,000 hours of weekly programming are broadcast from the U.S., including transmissions that call for terrorist acts and encourage illegal immigration. This aggression began on March 21, 1960, when a new edition of the Voice of America, VOA, in Spanish, began to be broadcast. As the U.S. government's official station, the VOA had certain limitations to issue propaganda against the island, and just 2 months later, broadcasts aimed at Cuba from Radio Swan began. On this station, with the commercial facade, counter-revolutionary organizations, publications, and radio stations of right-wing groups of Cuban origin based in Florida found their place. Monthly expenditure of between $400,000 and $500,000 cost the station to the CIA, the station that, when the mercenary invasion of Playa Girón, financed and supported by the United States, became an open instrument of the U.S. government against the Cuban people. The lack of credibility and the large budget cost to anti-Cuban operations of the agency made it disappear in the mid-60s. However, successive U.S. governments would not rest in its aggressions against the Cuban Revolution. With the rise of Ronald Reagan's administration, the official radio broadcasts directed specifically toward Cuba were restarted. In a serious affront to the dignity and the historical and patriotic legacy of the Cuban nation, the ill-named Radio Martí began on May 20, 1985, and TV Martí would also join in the 90s. Both the radio station and television channel falsify and distort information, while inciting hatred in the hope of destabilizing constitutional order in Cuba. The reports by international conferences regarding the destabilizing attempts of U.S. administrations have been countless, with total disregard for international norms and principles, seeking a pretext for an eventual military aggression against Cuba. For Radio Havana Cuba, Editorial Desk, I'm Maxwell James.
That viewpoint was from Radio Havana Cuba, heard from 2 p.m. to 3 at 11760, and from 4 to 11 p.m. at either 6060, 6010, or 6000. Also streaming on the web from 4 to 11 p.m. at www.radiohc.cu. And now podcasting at World Radio Network, which is wrn.org. If you have questions or comments about the Shortwave Report or would like to make a donation for production cost of this unfunded program, I may be reached through the website or by writing to Dan Roberts at P.O. Box 1162, Willits, California, 95490. I'm grateful for any donations. Please help support this show if you can. We'll conclude with Spanish National Radio. Demonstrators in Bahrain have been barred from the capital, and the Syrian government denies that it has committed crimes against humanity. Israel accuses Iran of terrorist acts in India, Georgia, and Thailand, while Iran formally accused Israel of involvement in the murder of five Iranian nuclear scientists. Spanish High Court Judge Balthazar Garzon was found guilty of one of the charges leveled against him by the new Spanish government. Here's an analysis by a member of Human Rights Watch, Spanish National Radio.
Demonstrators in Bahrain, marking the first anniversary of pro-democracy protests in that Gulf state, have been prevented from gathering in the capital Manama as authorities have sealed off large parts of the city. Clashes have been reported with police firing rubber bullets and tear gas at youths in several cities who hurled back petrol bombs and stones. The Syrian foreign minister has denied accusations by the UN that the Syrian government has committed crimes against humanity since the beginning of clashes last March. The ministry issued a statement accusing the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights of a lack of neutrality and objectivity. The statement says the High Commission has become an instrument for some countries that hold Syria as a target and ignore the terrorist crimes perpetrated by armed groups in the country. The government of President Bashar al-Assad has accused the uprising on a foreign conspiracy and says terrorist groups are behind the crisis in Syria. Israeli Defense Minister Ehud Barak has accused Iran of being behind yesterday's bomb attack in Bangkok, Thailand, in which a foreigner detonated an explosive next to a school. According to Thai television, the foreigner is an Iranian who first threw a grenade at a taxi he tried to hire when he found himself pursued by police. Then he tried to throw another at the police, but ended up blowing off his own legs. The man is currently in hospital. Another four people were mildly injured in the explosions. The incident in Bangkok occurred just one day after two terrorist attacks were reported against Israeli diplomatic interests in India and in Georgia.
For its part, Iran has accused Israel of being behind the recent assassinations of five Iranian nuclear scientists inside Iran. Last week, the American TV network NBC reported that the Israeli Secret Service has provided money, training, and weapons to an Iranian dissident group that is thought to be responsible for the killings of the scientists. The Israeli-funded Iranian group may also have been involved in a November explosion near Tehran that destroyed a missile facility and killed more than a dozen researchers. Demonstrators at a rally and march several weeks ago in support of embattled Spanish High Court Judge Baltasar Garzón, shouting, "Garzón, amigo, el pueblo está contigo." Garzón, friend, the people are behind you. This past Sunday, February 12th, some 2,000 people again braved the cold in a nonetheless sunny Madrid to demonstrate outside Spain's Supreme Court in the latest of the many demonstrations in support of Spain's most internationally known judge, who was disbarred by the Supreme Court for 11 years this past Thursday, February 9th, for illegally tapping defense lawyers' conversations in his investigation into a corruption network involving leading members of Spain's conservative Popular Party. That was the sentence in the first of three trials against Garzón, all of which are private prosecutions, brought by individuals and organizations rather than the state, and against the recommendation of the public prosecutor, who has recommended Garzón's acquittal. Thursday's ruling, which is not subject to appeal, may effectively end his career of international human rights trials, in which, among others, he secured the arrest in 1998 of late Chilean dictator Augusto Pinochet when he sought Pinochet's extradition from Britain to Spain for questioning. This past Monday, February 13th, the Spanish Supreme Court announced it was dropping the third case against Garzón because the statute of limitations had expired. I talked to Reed Brody of Human Rights Watch. Reed Brody, you were one of four international observers at the first day of the trial, the second trial against Spanish High Court Judge Baltasar Garzón, in which he was accused of opening an investigation into human rights crimes committed during the Spanish Civil War and the ensuing Franco dictatorship. Can you give us your impressions of that first day of the trial, please?
Well, the trial showed quite clearly that Judge Garzón's decision not to apply the amnesty law to the torture, disappearances, and killings of the Franco regime was fully supported by international law. Not only Garzón, but the other witnesses showed that these crimes were not political crimes, as should be covered by the amnesty, and that to the extent that many of, in fact, over 100,000 people have disappeared, those crimes continue to the present day and are not covered by the amnesty.
You say those crimes continue. There was a bit of a drop in the telephone connection. Those crimes continue.
Yes, to the extent that the tens or even more than 100,000 people remain disappeared, those are continuing crimes that are not covered by an amnesty for the past. But of course, the mere spectacle of a judge having to defend himself, having to justify why he investigated torture, disappearances, and killing, is an affront to the independence of the judiciary. These cases, the three of them that have been brought against Judge Garzón, are a concerted effort by his opponents to get rid of him. And they have succeeded now in doing that with the conviction in the Gürtel Intercepts case. Prosecuting a judge for decisions, even controversial decisions, even decisions that are overturned on appeal, is a very dangerous thing in a democracy.
And what do you think will be the verdict in the second trial against Garzón? In the first trial, he was found guilty of having ordered illegal wiretaps and disbarred for 11 years. So now he is, as you say, he's out of the way. The second trial, what sort of verdict do you expect from the Supreme Court?
Well, I would think the Supreme Court would acquit him. The damage has been done. His opponents have achieved their objective, which is getting Garzón out of the judiciary. And I think the Supreme Court will want to cut its losses and avoid further embarrassment by acquitting him for the Franco case. But the damage has been done, and the real loser here is not Judge Garzón, who has international reputation and already has international employment. The damage is first to the Spanish judiciary, but also to those Spaniards, those people in Latin America, those people in detention in Guantanamo, those people around the world who knew that there was a judge, an independent judge in Spain, who was willing to apply human rights law without fear of the political consequences. And that is the tragedy of what happened here, that a judge who over the last two decades has used human rights law, has applied it even when it was politically unpopular or inconvenient to do so, has been silenced. And the people who relied on a judge like that now will have nowhere to go.
Reed Brody, speaking to us from New York City, thank you very much for joining us today.
You're quite welcome.
Those reports are from Spanish National Radio, heard from 4 to 5 p.m. at 5970 and podcasting at rtve.es/radio. All the times I've announced are for Pacific Standard Time. Please adjust them to your time zone. One of my goals in producing this show is to encourage people to listen to international broadcasts using a shortwave radio at home. However, if you use the internet, listening globally is also quite easy. See the links at this program's website. Every Friday morning, I post a new shortwave report at the website for this show. That's www.outfarpress.com. At my website, you can also listen to past shows, find internet links for international broadcasters, make a safe donation through PayPal, and get advice for listening at home. The Shortwave Report is free to rebroadcast upon notification. The Shortwave Report is produced and distributed off the electrical grid in Northern California using solar panels. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. Thanks for listening.